My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today. We'll even give you a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/customer to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/customer. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars for the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedatum. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast Climbing in Heels is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello and welcome to another episode of The Mark Moss Show, where we talk about the decentralized revolution each and every week, talking about Bitcoin, cryptocurrencies, and the way the world is changing. Now, I try to keep you up to date with the education so you can see the world in the right way. There's a lot of noise out there, and we're looking for the signal. We got to kind of pull back the covers on this, and so I try to help you with that, bring to you some of the latest breaking news around the world so you can stay up to date on what's going on, and of course, bring to you some interesting guests so you can listen to. And right now, you know, we're going to talk about some of these big news stories so we can kind of understand what's going on in the world today. I think it's there's a lot going on. And lately what's been going on is the markets have been crashing. The stock markets have been crashing. The real estate markets are softening up. But the cryptocurrency markets, Bitcoin has been crashing. The crypto markets have been crashing. And, you know, it's interesting going through what we call a bear market when the markets drop this fast. In the Bitcoin space, in the cryptocurrency space, it happens, you know, every couple of years. You go through this Bitcoin bear market or this winter, as they call it. And it's been, you know, I guess maybe just the second time I've been through it. And it doesn't get any easier. But I want to give you some stories that will help you through with this. All right. So let's take a look and see what has been going on. So obviously, no surprise, the price of Bitcoin is way down. We know that from the November high that it set, we are down approximately, as of right now, about 67% off of the high, which is not good. It's pretty far down. However, if you put that into comparison, it's not good compared to what, right? That's always a question you'd want to ask yourself. Well, we know that the NASDAQ, for example, which has all the tech stocks, the NASDAQ index has bumped up in the last few days. We're down about 30% just on the index. So 67% on Bitcoin, 30% on the tech stocks. However, that doesn't really tell the picture, right? If we dig into the NASDAQ, we can see that half of the NASDAQ is down more than 50%. Most of it's down even more than Bitcoin. And most of the big names that you know and love, the Zooms, the Shopifys, the PayPals, they're down 70, 20% or more. So Bitcoin's done pretty good, but what is going to happen with it from here? That's a good question, and we'll dig into some of the stories this week to try to figure that out. So we can see that Bitcoin is one of the last free markets that we have. So it trades 24/7. It trades very liquid, and it's not. And so it trades pretty freely. That doesn't mean it's not manipulated. So because it's such a small market, it was up to about $1 trillion at one point. It's down to about $400 billion today. Which is a lot of money. But when you're a giant hedge fund on Wall Street, you throw around hundreds of billions at a time. So $400 billion isn't that big in the grand scheme of things compared to the overall markets, stock markets, et cetera. And so it moves, you know, it moves pretty easily. It's very thinly traded, meaning there's not a liquidity there. And so because of that, if you had enough liquidity, you could move the market. So what do I mean by that? Well, we can see that the market cap, like I said, is about $400 million. But there's about, there's about $25 billion a day that's being traded in Bitcoin, $25 billion. And so if you were to overwhelm the market with, you know, a few hundred million dollars, you could really affect the market one way or another. And so what we saw, and I've been covering this for weeks now, we saw this cascading, this domino effect of DeFi, decentralized finance, and CeFi, centralized finance platforms, companies, et cetera, starting to collapse. And what happened is when one went down, we started with Terra Luna. We talked about that at length. When that went down, it started to create liquidation, it started liquidating people. That's what happens when you use too much leverage. And we have too much leverage across all of the markets, from real estate to stocks and cryptocurrencies as well. And as those people's leverage were leveraged up and the price started going down, they started getting margin calls, meaning, hey, you better post more collateral or we're going to liquidate your position. And as those positions got sold into the market, it was more selling. More selling brought the price down even more, which then caused even more liquidations, which then brought the price down even more, which caused more liquidations. And you understand how it works. It's like a going down a set of stairs. And so then we started seeing Terra Luna go down, and then it started to drag down other ones. So then we saw like Celsius go down, and then it brought down Voyager. They had to file for bankruptcy over the last week, and it started bringing all of these down. But it looks like we've kind of hit the bottom with all of these big liquidations. And so we've seen FTX step in and basically backstop this. And it's kind of similar. And I used the, when we talked about Terra Luna, I talked about like the free banking era. And so before the Federal Reserve of the United States in the late 1800s, we had an era known as free banking, where banks could pop up, they could create their own currency. But these banks would go out of business all the time. And so the Federal Reserve was created for what they tell us is to backstop the banks, to protect the banks, to make sure that the banks don't go out of business. They would be what's called the lender of last resort. They would come in and buy them up or prop them up. And what we've kind of seen now is we're seeing all these CeFi and DeFi protocols and platforms going down, and FTX has now stepped in to start shoring these up to backstop these companies. And so they've agreed to buy BlockFi. I believe they've backstopped Voyager as well. And we're seeing FTX now, really, Sam Bankman-Fried, Alameda, come in and kind of backstop this, almost kind of take this Federal Reserve position. And I don't want to get super deep into that, but what I do want to just cover is that it looks like we've seen probably the worst of it at this point, meaning that we probably don't have any more of these giant liquidations in front of us, because I don't see how they would put in, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars to just let it go away, disappear now. They're sitting on billions of dollars. If they need to prop in, put in more money, they'll put in more money. They're not going to let it go down now. So I think that damage is done. So markets stop going down when there's no more sellers. Pretty simple. And so you had all these liquidations, these forced sellers continue to sell and sell and sell. It kept pushing the price down, which caused more liquidations. I talked you through that. But now, who are the sellers? Well, we saw more over the last week or two. And what am I talking about that? Well, now the Bitcoin miners are forced to start liquidating their Bitcoin. As a matter of fact, they've been dumping it, and it would be a better word. And we can see a bunch of these big Bitcoin mining companies, publicly traded ones, have been dumping their Bitcoin. We can see Argo Blockchain was the latest crypto mining firm to dump Bitcoin. It sold 15.6 million in Bitcoin. It's the second crypto miner this week to announce it sold more coin than it mined last month. So typically, they would be mining Bitcoin, but they wouldn't sell it all. They'd keep some of it. But Argo had to sell all of the coins they mined last month, and they had to dip into some of their savings or their reserves and start selling that as well. In June, they had sold 637 Bitcoin, which pushed the price down. They had mined 179. So they mined 179, but they sold 637. So that was big, but they're not the only ones doing that. Another crypto miner called Core Scientific dumped $165 million worth of Bitcoin to get more liquidity. So they had to sell over 7,000 Bitcoin to cover costs. Now, they say that they sold 7,200 Bitcoin at an average price of $23,000, leaving 1,900 on their books. So they got rid of 7,000. They still have almost 2,000 left. So they could potentially sell more, but they've sold the majority of it. They said they're not having a tough time. They're going to be okay. They still expect to bring on 70,000 new Bitcoin mining computers in the next 6 months. They've already paid 90% of the cost for these, so those should be good. But we see this going on and on and on. Here's this says here in the last 2 weeks of June, many large Bitcoin wallets have emerged over the past 2 weeks. A number of addresses holding 10 to 10,000 Bitcoin appeared on the network while Bitcoin was going down, and they popped up to absorb more than 18,000 Bitcoin worth $372 million. Was put onto the market by these Bitcoin miners, and it all got absorbed. And so it looks like all of the big selling is done. Now, individuals could still sell. Some of these miners still have some Bitcoin they could still sell, but the majority of it is done. And even more importantly, all these big whales showed up and gobbled it all up. So it's bullish. It looks like maybe we found the bottom. Of course, we'd never know until we're looking backwards on it. But based off of what we can see, based off of the liquidations, based off the mining sales, maybe we have. You're listening to The Mark Moss Show, talking about Bitcoin, cryptocurrencies, and the decentralized revolution. I got a lot more to cover in a minute when I come back, so don't go away. I'll be right back.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rocked the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James!
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storr on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You can't fully understand the moment we're living in without knowing where we've been. On every episode of NPR's Throughline, we take a story from the news and go back in time to where it started. Where it really started. To answer one important question, how did we get here? Find NPR's Throughline on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
Western nations like the U.S. and Europe.
Mexico will likely have its first female president.
And then you have China.
And help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters.
He'll get his yo-yos to Europe in time. But the longer this drags on, the more worry he's getting.
They knew that they needed to do this as fast as they possibly could to get a drug on the market as fast as they could.
I'm David Gura.
I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen. We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets.
Basically, everyone was expecting, if not a calamity, certainly a recession.
But the problem is that that paperwork, as our reporting showed, is fake.
As someone who's covering the market, I'm often very worried about an imminent collapse. So I'm thinking about it quite often.
Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters.
It's an election year, so there's a lot of focus on the voters that TikTok is reaching.
The initial reaction is like, oh, things are looking so resilient.
I don't want to be too pessimistic, but I just don't see the political will down in Washington right now to change their tune.
I think the American electorate has been signaling that it expects a rematch of the 2020 election. These are unprecedented times.
With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back. You're listening to The Mark Maugh Show. We're talking about the decentralized revolution. Look at the way the world is changing. Of course, the catalyst being Bitcoin, cryptocurrencies. And we've been talking about Bitcoin and what's going on with the price, what's happening with the liquidations, what's pushing the price down. There is a lot of stuff going on. But it looks like we might have about found the bottom of it. We know that markets stop going down when there's no more sellers. Now, there was a lot of big companies that went down. And so we talked about Terra Luna. That's gone. But Celsius is one of the biggest ones. And they halted withdrawals. And a lot of people have money locked up on that platform that they may or may not be able to get off. And a lot of people are hopeful that they'll get their money off. There's a chance. Depends on where your money is, in which account, if it's in a lending account or if it's in a holding account. It depends on what they're going through, like a bankruptcy now. So it depends on how they decide to negotiate this out. Will depend on if you get some and how much you get. So there's a lot of factors there. But first thing they had to do is they had to survive to even get to the point where they could negotiate that down. Now, we talked about markets stop going down when there's no more sellers. And these big liquidations have been happening, have been basically forcing the sell of thousands and thousands and thousands of Bitcoin, dumping them onto the market. And it was a little bit scary for me because what's been happening, and I've been talking about this extensively, is that we have these big Wall Street funds and they're hunting these pegs to break them so they can make some money. Now, it happens all the time. It's been happening for a long time. They do it outside of cryptocurrency as well. I mean, just think GameStop, right? And so they'll purposely try to break these pegs. That's how George Soros got famously rich, made $1 billion in one day by breaking the peg of the Bank of England. And so they'll throw around their weight. They'll throw around their money to try to break these things. And they may or may not have something to do with Celsius going down, having to halt with their draws. But we could see, because with Bitcoin and blockchain, we can see these most of these addresses, and we can see where the wallets are and how many coins they hold and et cetera. And we could see, based off of these decentralized protocols, these DeFi lending protocols, that they had a liquidation price. I want to say it was around like $18,000. If Bitcoin got to about $18,000, then Celsius would be liquidated. And that means two things. One, that would push the price of Bitcoin down even more. And two, if they got liquidated, anybody that had money on Celsius that was trapped, that were hoping to get some back, wouldn't get it. But they've been able to get money to continue to pay this loan down. They took out a decentralized finance loan on a protocol called MakerDAO. And so the way it works on a decentralized protocol is that you have to over-collateralize the loan. And so if I want to borrow $50, I have to give them $100 or more of collateral. And so in order for, if that gets liquidated, then Celsius would lose all of that collateral they had on the exchange. But they've been able to continue to get more money, and I don't know where they've been getting money from, but it says here that Celsius Network was able to pay down the remaining $41 million of its debt on the DeFi platform, on the MakerDAO platform, which freed up $440 million worth of collateral, which is a pretty good move for Celsius, and it's good if you have money trapped on the Celsius platform. We can see here it says that the on-chain data, so that's how we can see what's happening here. We can see all this on-chain data. It's one of the benefits of the Bitcoin and the blockchain technology is that we can see all that data, and so it adds transparency, which in my opinion is a good thing. When you have things like stocks and equities and things like that, you have no idea what's going on there. But at least the blockchain, we can see that data. So on-chain data shows that a wallet linked to Celsius repaid the remaining $41.2 million of the loan in DAI, which is the currency that MakerDAO uses, which is the, says the Maker's Protocol stablecoin. That prompted the Maker Protocol to release 21,962, so about 22,000 Bitcoin. 22,000 Bitcoin. Imagine those 22,000 Bitcoin being dumped into the market if that was liquidated. That wouldn't be good for the overall cryptocurrency market. It wouldn't be good for Bitcoin. It certainly wouldn't be good for Celsius, and certainly wouldn't be good for anybody that has money trapped on Celsius that are hoping to get that out. So that took that away. Remember, 22,000 Bitcoin were at danger of being liquidated in the market. It says that works out to about 448 million since the Bitcoin was recently traded in about 20,400, which at the time of this recording, we're up a little bit higher than that. We're over 21,000 right now. We can see here that Fundstrat analyst told CoinDesk the collateral that Celsius freed up can be sold on centralized exchanges or via over-the-counter to meet creditor demands and customer withdrawals. So now they have that money, and now maybe they could start letting some customers get withdrawals. Now, I don't think they can because I believe now they're kind of in this receivership or this reorganization or restructuring where they're going to have to wait for like a formal plan, an orderly plan to start giving money back. But hopefully there's some hope if you have money on Celsius that you might actually get some back. Could be pennies, could be none. Don't hold your breath, but there is a little bit of hope. It says the sell, which is their native token on the Celsius platform, spiked 10% within minutes on the news, but it's still down 81% on the year. And it says the loans on decentralized lending platforms such as Maker are generally over-collateralized. So it goes back to if you wanted to borrow $50, you'd have to put up about $100 or more, meaning that the borrower has to put up more assets in value as a backing of the loan than the value of the loan itself. Repaying the loan made sense for Celsius because it could get a grip of the valuable collateral by paying back a fraction of its value. So they paid back the $440 million. They got $440 million of collateral back. So big news for Celsius. Now, it doesn't mean we're out of the woods, but I think it is good news nevertheless. But I would say that I hope this is a wake-up call for everybody. Now, I put out a tweet, I think it was, about a week ago, and I said something to the effect of the age of personal responsibility is going to snap back and hard. And what do I mean by that? So, you know, I feel really bad for anybody who's lost any money. I don't wish that upon anybody, not even my enemies, which I don't think I have any enemies. Hopefully I don't. I try not to. But I don't wish anybody to lose money. So I feel bad for them. But at the same time, you should never be loaning money to somebody that you don't know what the risk is of them paying you back. You shouldn't do that. So if you put money onto Celsius, you should have known there was risk there. And if you didn't, then why would you put money there if you didn't know there was risk? So right off the bat, you shouldn't have put money there. Then if you did and you knew there was risk, you should have been paying attention to that. Now, maybe you believed, like a lot of people, that they had over-collateralized all their loans. And so that there was really no risk of them not paying you back because if other people didn't pay them back, they had the collateral, right? But then you saw in the news that they lost money on Badger DAO. What the heck were they doing investing into something as risky as a Badger DAO? And so that should have told you like, oh, shoot, they're doing things that are pretty risky. I should maybe be aware of that. And not just to pick on Celsius, it could be BlockFi, it could be Voyager, it could be any of these things. First of all, if they're offering to pay you 8, 10, 12% interest, maybe that's too good to be true. Second of all, you know that's going to have risk. That's the only way they can pay you back if there was risk. Third of all, you should be paying attention to that. And when you saw some of these risky signs, you should have done something to remove that risk that you were facing. Now, again, I'm not trying to wave my finger and say I told you so. I'm certainly not saying that at all. What I'm saying is that it's time for you to step up and take responsibility for yourself. And whether you got caught in one of these or didn't, please use this. We either win or we learn. We either win. If I lose, at least I learn. So at least learn from this. Learn that there's no such thing as risk-free returns. There's always risk. Understand how to quantify that risk. Take the proper steps to limit that risk and become responsible for yourself because no one's coming to save you. You're listening to The Mark Moss Show. We're talking about the decentralized revolution, talking about Bitcoin, cryptocurrencies, and trying to make sense of the news that's going on today so we can understand where things are going in the near future. I'll be back with a lot more in a second, so don't go away. I'll be right back.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray Rock. rock the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James!
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storm on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You can't fully understand the moment we're living in without knowing where we've been. On every episode of NPR's Throughline, we take a story from the news and go back in time to where it started, where it really started. To answer one important question, how did we get here? Find NPR's Throughline on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
Western nations like the U.S. and Europe.
Mexico will likely have its first female president.
And then you have China.
And help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters.
He'll get his yo-yos to Europe in time. But the longer this drags on, the more worry he's getting.
They knew that they needed to do this as fast as they possibly could to get a drug on the market as fast as they could.
I'm David Gura.
I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen. We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets.
Basically, everyone was expecting, if not a calamity, certainly a recession.
But the problem is that that paperwork, as our reporting showed, is fake.
As someone who's covering the market, I'm often very worried about an imminent collapse. So I'm thinking about it quite often.
Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My name is Johnny B. Good, and I'm the host of the new podcast, Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. Over this nine-part series, I'll explore the life and crimes of my best friend, Ray Trapani.
I always wanted to be a criminal.
If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
You see, Ray has this unique ability to find loopholes and exploit them.
They collected $30 million. There were headlines about it.
His company, CentraTech, was one of the hottest crypto startups in 2017. It was going to change the world, until it didn't.
I came into my office, opened my email, and the subject heading was FBI request.
It was only a matter of time before the truth came out.
You can only fake it till you make it for so long before they find out that your Harvard degree is not so crimson.
How could you sit there and do something that you know will objectively cause more harm in the world?
Listen to Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back. You are listening to The Mark Maw Show. We're talking about the decentralized revolution, the world as it's changing right before our very eyes. Of course, it's being led by technologies like Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies. And so we talk about that and we watch the world as it unfolds so we can navigate it. Now, one thing that's important to think about when you're talking about new technologies like Bitcoin. Now, Bitcoin isn't just a new technology. Bitcoin is a technological revolution. There's a difference. A new technology is something cool, and it's an improvement, and it extends markets. So like an iPhone was cool. We took a computer and a phone. We put them together. Now, that's cool. And I love the iPhone. Don't get me wrong. A technological revolution is different in a way that it changes the course of humanity, and it drives financial markets. There's only been five. I believe Bitcoin is the sixth technological revolution. They come about every 50 years. But whenever you're looking at new technologies, and especially technological revolutions, it's important to understand how to look at them properly. And one of the things that I mean by that is the wrong way to look at them is by looking at the price. The price is the least interesting thing and the least accurate thing to take a look at. So I like to use the story over and over. If you tune in every week, then I apologize if you heard this before, but I like to think about Uber. And Uber, you know, was pitched in Silicon Valley a decade ago, and it was supposedly going to be this new way to get a ride, you know, from your phone. And people are like, well, what do you mean? Like, can't I use my phone to call a taxi? Well, yeah, it's sort of like that, but there's this like cool app and whatever, right? But imagine if So when you invest into what's called venture capital, venture deals, these are really early companies, they typically don't go public, if they ever go at all, for about a decade. So that means for a decade, you had money if you would have invested into Uber, which, by the way, you would have done really well if you would have done that. There's been a lot of other losers. But if you would have invested into Uber in the early days, you would have had to wait about a decade for it to go public and have a daily stock price where you could get your money out of it. So during that decade, how would you know if it's doing any good? Because it doesn't have a daily price. It's not publicly listed. So looking at the price is not something you can do. And even if you could, it would be the wrong thing to look at. And the reason why is when it's so small and so new, it'd be extremely volatile. And you'd be shaken out all the time. Imagine with Uber where it's like, hey, we moved into San Francisco, hooray, and the price goes up. And then, New York cab drivers are protesting against Uber, and then the price goes down. And every time good news or bad news comes out, it goes up and down, up and down, up and down. And it would drive you crazy. But that's exactly what's happened with Bitcoin. Bitcoin has been a live price since day one. So if you can't look at the price, or you shouldn't look at the price, what should you be looking at? Well, you want to look at two things. One is the network growth, the growth of the network, Metcalfe's law. Is the network expanding? Are more people using it? Are the number of wallets going up? Are the addresses going up? Are the miners, the amount of computers that are mining on the network, which equals hash power, the combined power of those computers is hash power, is that going up? Is the network growing? Is the network becoming stronger? And then we want to look at the development on the network. So think about, back to the Uber example, is the Uber network growing? Are there more people signing up to give rides? Right? Like, what good is Uber if there's no one that will give you a ride? So you need to have all the cities, and you need to have as many drivers as you can in all the cities, right? So the more cities and the more drivers you have, the better. But you also need riders, so are the riders going up? So is the network growing? And so we would say that with Bitcoin it is, right? We can see that through the growth of the miners, the growth of the Bitcoin wallets. We can see how many wallets are being added to the system. And the other thing with Uber is you'd look at the development on the network. Is it developing? Have they added new types of cars? Now they have rideshare. Now they have vans. Now they do Uber Eats, right? And so they're developing on the network. They're improving the product, and the network is growing. Now, it's important to understand with a network, network effects are very, very powerful. So a lot of people say, well, why can't you just copy Bitcoin? Well, you can. You can totally copy Bitcoin, but you can't copy the network, right? So I could probably have someone make me a copy of Facebook, and I can call it Mark's book, but it doesn't mean anybody would use it, right? So I can make a copy of Bitcoin, but it doesn't mean anybody would use it. More importantly, it doesn't mean anybody would come mine on it. Would all the miners that have spent hundreds of billions of dollars to mine Bitcoin to help secure the network, would they all just come start mining Mark's coin? They'd give all that up? Most likely not. What about all the development that's happened on that, all the services that have been built? So the Bitcoin Lightning, Layer 2, and all the different wallets and all the apps and all of that, would they all just come onto Mark's coin? Probably not. So while I can copy the idea, I could copy maybe even the technology, I can't copy the network. Now, Michael Saylor wrote a book a long time ago, and he was talking about network effects. And I believe he said, like, any company that's achieved over like $100 billion valuation, the network effects are too strong for it to be overcome. And you don't really see companies lose once they've built that network up. And so, again, think Facebook today. Now, eventually, maybe people will stop using it, but there's no way like another social media app would come and replace that. Amazon, right? So these have big network effects. Again, I can go make a new site where you can buy and sell products, but doesn't mean that network will come over. So we want to look at those things. And I saw this week something that we've seen over and over and over is we're seeing Mindshare. Some of the smartest people in the world are leaving their very high positions to come work in this space. And so I know right now we're in a bear market. The price of Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies are way down. And Bitcoin is dead again, right? It's been dead, I think, 13 or 14 times. Every time the price drops, it's dead. Never mind that it's fallen all the way down to its previous high position it was at before. So again, looking at the wrong thing. But if Bitcoin is dead, then why are some of the smartest people in the biggest positions of the world coming over to work on it? And so we saw this week a news story came out. It says three executives leave JP Morgan this week to join crypto firms. So JP Morgan, one of the biggest and most connected banks in the world, in the United States, Jamie Dimon and JP Morgan. Jamie Dimon had once said, Bitcoin is a scam. If anybody at JP Morgan traded it, I would fire them. But of course, now JP Morgan's moved into the space. But three executives at one of the most connected banks in the world have left to go join crypto. Now, a lot of people said, well, it's never going to work because, you know, the government's going to make it illegal and all these things, right? Well, these executives are, you know, they know a couple things and they would probably not agree because they've left their high-powered jobs in traditional finance to go work for this new company. Let's take a look at that. So we can see here a banner week for people departing megabank JP Morgan to join the cryptocurrency industry. Three executives taking the plunge despite a looming crypto winter. So even though the price is down, even though it's dead again, even though it's never going to work, they've decided to leave JP Morgan to go join the crypto industry in the winter, no less. Now, as someone who's been through a few bear markets, let me just say that bear markets are the time to build. That's the time to get ahead. We can see the latest leavers include Eric Raggi, a former managing director at JP Morgan with 21 years tenure at the bank. Look, he wasn't just a guy who had been there for a few months. He had 21 years tenure at the bank. He left to go work head of business development and capital markets at a company. We have Pooja Samuel, formerly a head of ideation and digitization at JP Morgan based in New York City, joins the Digital Currency Group. Digital Currency Group runs the new site CoinDesk. They run the event called Consensus. They have the big Grayscale Trust, Bitcoin Trust. So he left to go work there. And we have JP Morgan banker Samir Shah left the bank to become chief operating officer at an investment firm called Pantera Capital. So look, these people don't think crypto is dead. You might. But I would just stop and ask myself, am I more connected than this guy that worked at JP Morgan for 21 years? I'm not. I don't know anybody at Wall Street or inside JP Morgan. Am I smarter than them? I probably know different things than they know, but you might want to stop and think when you see this amount of mindshare leaving traditional finance to go work in this industry, especially in a bear market, and that should give you hope. I think if you zoom out and you can have the right time perspective, these things can help you a lot. I still believe it's the greatest opportunity that we'll ever see in our lifetime. Now, you're listening to The Mark Maw Show. We're talking about the decentralized revolution, the way the world is changing right before our very eyes. The catalyst, of course, is technology, as always, being led by decentralized technology. We're talking about Bitcoin. Just going through some of the mind share that's leaving the space, and I got a lot more to cover when I come back in a minute. Some big stuff, so don't go away. I'll be right back.
I'm Hannah Storm, and my podcast, NBA DNA with Hannah Storm, digs deep into the history of professional basketball, along with my own as one of the first female sportscasters.
Now let's get you up to speed on what else happened around the NBA today.
We talked to all sorts of people I interacted with, from Dr. J to Charles Barkley, and recap iconic moments.
Yes, he's got it. Here he comes. Ray rocked the baby to sleep and slam dunk.
As well as some of the wild stories behind the scenes.
We were like, what? What are we in for? The scoreboard crashes before we even tip a game off.
Today, the NBA is a global sports and entertainment giant. Players are multimillionaires and cultural icons.
Iguodala to Curry, back to Iguodala, up for the layup. Oh, blocked by James! LeBron James!
And these stories are about how we got here, both on and off the court. And what's next? Listen to NBA DNA with Hannah Storr on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You can't fully understand the moment we're living in without knowing where we've been. On every episode of NPR's Throughline, we take a story from the news and go back in time to where it started. Where it really started. To answer one important question, how did we get here? Find NPR's Throughline on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
Western nations like the U.S. and Europe.
Mexico will likely have its first female president.
And then you have China.
And help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters.
He'll get his yo-yos to Europe in time. But the longer this drags on, the more worried he's getting.
They knew that they needed to do this as fast as they possibly could to get a drug on the market as fast as they could.
I'm David Gura.
I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen. We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets.
Basically, everyone was expecting, if not a calamity, certainly a recession.
But the problem is that that paperwork, as our reporting showed, is fake.
As someone who's covering the market, I'm often very worried about an imminent collapse. So I'm thinking about it quite often.
Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My name is Johnny B. Goode, and I'm the host of the new podcast, Creating a Con, The Story of Bitcoin. Over this 9-part series, I'll explore the life and crimes of my best friend, Ray Trapani.
I always wanted to be a criminal.
If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
You see, Ray has this unique ability to find loopholes and exploit them.
They collected $30 million. There were headlines about it.
His company, CentraTech, was one of the hottest crypto startups in 2017. It was going to change the world, until it didn't.
Came into my office, opened my email, and the subject heading was FBI request.
It was only a matter of time before the truth came out.
You can only fake it till you make it for so long before they find out that your Harvard degree is not so crimson.
How could you sit there and do something that you know will objectively cause more harm in the world?
Listen to Creating a Con, The Story of Bitcoin on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back. You are listening to The Mark Moss Show. We're talking about the decentralized revolution. We're talking about Bitcoin. We're talking about cryptocurrencies. We are talking about the latest breaking news so we can see all of this playing out in real time. Now, hopefully you got the last segment there. It's a bear market, but it's not dead. We're seeing people, some of the top people from the traditional finance space are leaving their posts to come in. But I want to talk about a couple things here real quick. So let's see here. First thing, we have to understand what happened in the market. We saw a bunch of experimentation, which I'm a fan of experimentation. CeFi, DeFi, decentralized finance, centralized finance. And we saw it end pretty badly. Now, I was talking about before that, if it sounds too good to be true, a lot of times it is. Doesn't mean it always is, but a lot of times it is. And so at a minimum, you should use some extra scrutiny and you should really dig in and take a look at this. And I think when we're looking at the CeFi, DeFi platforms, centralized finance or decentralized finance platforms, we're talking about the BlockFi's, the Celsius's, the Voyagers, et cetera. When we're looking at those and they're paying out, 20% interest, you might ask yourself, how in the heck, in the world that we're in today with zero interest rates, they're able to pay out 20%? And you would ask yourself that. Now, we talked about how all of this collapsed and how it became this cascading domino effect, and it's really dragged the entire market cap down with it. But I think it's also fundamentally transformed the industry. At least I hope so. So I think it's washed out most of, not all, but pretty much most of the leverage that's been built up in the system. But what I also hope is that it wakes people up to like I was saying earlier, the era of personal responsibility. And I think you have to, one, be responsible for yourself and think about the risk that you're taking. But also, I think it maybe marks an end to that entire era that was there. People were taking a lot of risk. They were putting a coin on this DeFi platform, and they're taking it out of here, and they're wrapping it, and they're putting it under here, and they're taking the yield, and they're wrapping that, and they're putting it on here, and they're adding all these steps, adding all this complexity to try to get more and more what we'd call alpha, more profit, more yield. And in order to do that, they were taking more and more risk. So it pushes people way out on this risk curve in order to do that. And now, through the collapse of Anchor and other DeFi protocols, we're seeing that these platforms have blown up. It's shrunk the amount of value that's locked up into these DeFi protocols. It shrunk about 70% from its all-time high. And we're seeing a lot of them that have just disappeared altogether. And I think, you can't ever count out the stupidity of other people. But typically when you touch a hot stove and you burn your hand, you don't do that again. Sometimes they might, but I think it should be abundantly clear of anybody looking right now that high returns equals high risk. And at a minimum, if you want to continue to try these things, hopefully you'll take a much more seasoned approach to it. Now, I also want to give, that's kind of what I'm thinking about the space overall, but I also want to give some advice. I was went to a meetup last night, Swan Bitcoin put together. Shout out to Swan Bitcoin. If you're looking to buy Bitcoin, check them out, swanbitcoin.com, I think /Mark, by the way. Get $10 in free Bitcoin. But we went to a meetup last night, and we were talking about the market and what's going to happen and when will the price of Bitcoin come back. And how long will this bear market last, this crypto bear market? And I said, you know, shoot, it could be 3 years before we see the all-time high price come back. And some people didn't like that answer. And, you know, I've been through this before. It doesn't, maybe it gets a little bit easier, but it's still not fun, still painful. But I said, you know, if it took that long to get back, that would be a 3x return from here, you know, in 3 years, that's pretty good return. I like that. But also, I think that these bear markets, these winters are opportunities to build in. So let's talk about a survival guide for the crypto bear market and how to get ready for the next bull run. And I think a couple things, you know, one thing that I think of is, what if it never comes back? It's a scary one. I think about that. And having gone through this before, like I said, it doesn't necessarily get easier. So how do I deal with that? You know, should I panic? Should I sell out right now? Or should I double down? Well, I would think about it a couple ways. So first of all, why did you buy the asset? What do you think is going to happen with that asset? And what's your plan for that? So for me, for example, I believe Bitcoin is the most pristine asset, reserve asset we've ever seen. I believe it's a superior form of money. I believe it's going to take a big majority out of the global reserve assets. I believe that. And so that's why I bought it. That's why I hold it. And what am I planning to do with it? Well, I'm planning to hold it until that becomes reality, which could be past my lifetime. And so that's what I'm waiting for. Now, when it crashes in price, should I panic and sell it or should I double down? Well, I would ask myself, do I still think that could be true? Well, the network still works as designed. The network growth is still happening, development network is happening. It looks like it's still on track to do that. So I'm going to continue to hold. As a matter of fact, I will double down on this. Now, let's say that you bought like a Bored Ape NFT, for example. Why did you buy it? And what did you expect to happen? And what were you thinking would happen? So let's say that you bought this because all your friends were buying them and were doubling, tripling their money within 30 days. Now you bought it and the price dropped by 70%. Well, do you still think you can double or triple your money in 30 days? You know, and ask yourself that question. Now I would say, well, shoot, now there's been a million Bored Apes come on and I can just go onto Google Images and search Bored Apes and I could just right click and save any of those. So I don't know if that's going to be a reality anymore. I really bought into the hype, but the hype's dead now. And so since the hype is dead and I only bought it for the hype and it's dead, then maybe I should get rid of it. Now, I'm not saying that's the case, but these are ways that I would think through this process. You never want to become a forced seller. So that means you don't want to panic at the bottom. It's simple, not easy, but simple. You're supposed to buy low and sell high, not buy high and sell low. So you don't want to be a forced seller at the bottom. You shouldn't panic, which brings me to the next point, which is avoid panic selling. You also want to avoid greed. So if you were only buying these Bored Apes at astronomical levels because you thought you could triple or quadruple or 10x your money in 30 days, you were buying into greed. So you want to avoid greed. I can tell you that my phone starts ringing off the hook with people I haven't talked to in years and years and years when Bitcoin reaches new all-time highs. They're buying into greed. You're supposed to buy at the bottom when it's cheap, not at the top when it's expensive. But now it's cheap and people don't want to buy. So think about that. But you want to avoid the panic selling. That means being forced to sell. That means avoid liquidations. And so that goes into my next point, which is staying solvent. So you don't ever want to buy or trade with leverage. I like to say leverage is like fire. It can warm your house up or it can burn your house down. And a lot of times people get into the greedy part. They start using leverage And then they become a forced seller. So those things all kind of work together. And so, shoot, if my Bitcoin's not levered, then I can let it ride all the way down and I'll hold it until it goes all the way back up again. But if I have leverage against it, I've taken loans against it, or I'm trading with leverage with it, then, and the price moves down, then I get liquidated. Then I become a forced seller. So then I was forced to sell low. I don't want to sell low. I want to sell high. And so you don't ever want to become a forced seller. You don't want to be a panic seller. You want to still stay solvent. The other thing I'd say is research. Spend your time doing research. What's going on? Is it going to survive? What was my thesis? Why did I buy it? What did I expect would happen? Is that still on track? As long as I'm researching, and as long as my thesis is remaining true, and as long as that project is staying on track, then I'm going to continue to stay in it. If I come to find out that there's new information and it's not on track anymore, then I should get out of it as fast as I can. The last piece I'd give you is keep your job. We saw a record amount of job quits at the end of last year. People want to quit their jobs to trade options on Robinhood and trade cryptocurrencies. Think twice about quitting your job. You want to have income coming in so you're not forced into be an emotional forced seller. Hopefully that helps you get through the crypto bear market, however long it lasts. You're listening to The Mark Maw Show, talking about the decentralized revolution, talking about Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies. That's what I got for you today. Thanks for listening. Until next time.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming back to Atlanta.
Right now.
Whoa. Mark your calendars for the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
It's brand new season two. I'm Marissa Thalberg.
And I'm Stephen Wolf Bedeta. And we're excited to be back having bigger, bolder, and always real conversations.
Straight from the C-suite front lines of marketing, media, and more.
We have great friends joining from people you may know, like Wilmer Valderrama and Bobby Burke.
And people you'll want to know. So grab a coffee or, hey, even an Aperol Spritz and come join us on America's number one podcast network, iHeart.
Listen to Brand New on the iHeart Radio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and my podcast Climbing in Heels is back and better than ever. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project, or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. Climbing in Heels is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You can't fully understand the moment we're living in without knowing where we've been. On every episode of NPR's Throughline, we take a story from the news and go back in time to where it started, where it really started. To answer one important question, how did we get here? Find NPR's Throughline on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.